The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Zoomed Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. This program will take you behind the scenes and deepen your understanding about the patterns and perspectives of leadership today. Now, here's your host, John Schmidt.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's edition of Zoomed Leadership. I am your host, John Schmidt. And again today, as I have been and will continue to do, I'll be taking us out to the big picture, into the up close and personal, and toward a world of desirable futures. I'm excited about today's show. I must confess right off, it is about potentiality, and it is about a subject I dearly love. And as we have reflected that in our episode title, I hope that stimulates that for you, potentiality in the emerging wisdom culture. I think we have a lot here to really glean. But I would say that we are continuing today, as I've described last week, with an emphasis on positive and tangible views of the future, really largely about what can be beyond the cynicism of some of the doom, depression, perhaps even the negativity that can so often pervade these conversations and for sure about writings about the nature of reality. But I must say that the realities of the big picture continue as we've been talking about them. They are a backdrop. And they are a backdrop from which we're ever more differentiating our understanding about why we're embarking on an era of extraordinary change, and moreover, how we're at the edge of the possibility for really a great turning of our society. So if you're new to the show, we've been talking a lot about the big picture. We've been taking it down to a personal level. But largely with the big picture, we've been looking at life on Earth and the systems we've created and how they're running up against the limits. Our economy is based on a future that must be exponentially larger than the past, and the system is running up against financial and credit limits, ecological limits, as we talked about the last couple of weeks, and limits of our foundational platform of energy, oil. So we're not running out of oil, but likely moving forward toward or nearing the end of cheap oil, which is the fundamental upon which much of our tangible wealth and our lifestyle, as well as our convenience, really in our lives have been based. So these stories are real, and we're going to continue to delve into them more deeply in upcoming weeks. Richard Heinberg of the Post Carbon Institute will be joining us on energy in just a few weeks, and next week, Janet Larson, Research Director of the Earth Policy Institute, will be exploring Lester Brown's just-released book, Plan B 4.0. But today, we are about potentiality and the emerging wisdom culture, that with a positive view to the future. And my guest, I must say at the outset, has always been a personal stimulus to my own thinking, to my own window on what is really going on with our developing society, our values, our culture at large. And in particular, I've really gleaned and been reflective of a big picture gained from Paul today toward the scale and scope of the worldviews coming into form in the world. So with us, the deeply thoughtful, the exceedingly wise Dr. Paul Ray, co-author of the groundbreaking book, The Cultural Creatives, and he's the director of the Institute for Emerging Wisdom at Wisdom University, and a few others, pointers for the few of you that I suspect don't know Paul, and only a few. Paul is the research director at the State of the World Forum. He's the past associate professor of urban planning at the University of Michigan, chief of policy research on energy conservation and solar with the Government of Canada. Can go on and on with this, but moreover, let me just say he's led the research efforts on over 100 major projects, delving into areas such as the new political compass, which warrants a show by itself. Paul, it's awesome to have you on the show today. Thanks for joining us on Zoom.
Oh, thank you, John. That's more introduction than I ever could want.
Well, it's okay. It's entirely deserving, Paul, and I am personally delighted because you have been really, in some respects, an inspiration in that window and the view toward cultural creatives, which I think is maybe a place for us to start here. I think many of the population that and the listeners on Zoom may be familiar with it, but maybe you could start with the notion of who is a cultural creative and how that work has come forward. Your initial research probably some 10 years ago and updated more recently. Maybe start with that way for us, Paul.
Well, let's see. I started doing social research way back in 1962 after The Silent Spring came out with Rachel Carson.
Yes.
And I got involved in looking at issues of ecology and what this was going to do to the planet. And very few people at the time were taking a planetary perspective, but I was one of the systems kind of guys who was really concerned about how ecology intersected with economics and social life and so on. So I've been at this almost 50 years. It's just kind of stunning to think how we had a sense of hopelessness back before the 60s revolution occurred in the early 60s about, oh my God, nobody's going to face up to this seriousness of all of this. And we kept coming back, researchers kept coming back to it saying, how are we ever going to get anybody to pay attention to the threats to civilization of ecological disaster, really, that are heading toward us? And how are we going to get people to pay attention to the fact that peak oil is coming back in the 70s? Many people don't know it, but back in the 60s, the chief geologist for Shell Oil, M. King Hubbard, predicted the 1970s oil crisis and said this is the time when all the maximum production, the peaking of oil in the United States, was going to occur. And he was poo-pooed by every oil company, and a year later, sure enough, that's what happened.
Sure enough, yes, that's right.
And so I actually shifted from doing research in sociology to policy research around energy sustainability, because I figured that was the single biggest leverage point. And when Ronnie Reagan... That was, so I was doing that in the mid-70s, and when Ronnie Reagan was about to get elected and kill off energy conservation research and solar and so on in the United States, I went to Canada to head up the government's policy research on energy conservation and solar. Then, of course, Brian Mulroney comes along, another Reagan Thatcher, and kills it off in Canada. So when I came back to the United States, I said, all right, time for a reset. Time to think this thing through a little better. Where is the leverage for positive change toward getting people to respond? Is there anybody who's able to give us a better insight? And so I hit upon new things that were occurring in values research, where values are your most important life priorities. And that was something that I was really interested in looking at to say, can we get people to shift their life priorities toward dealing with what we now call ecological sustainability? Can we get them to come up against the issues of energy crisis and the limits to growth of that research that was coming out at the time? And that was the big question. Are we committed to just growing exponentially until we have a crash? Because that's, you know, the history of civilizations on the planet shows that that's usually the outcome when elites don't have to pay any attention to what's going on, when they're buffered from the negative trends that have been set in motion. They just don't respond. And so it was beginning to look like the United States was getting into a pattern of not responding. So basically what happened for me in the early 80s was trying to get a foothold in that. And finally, I set up a research company called American Lives, where we did a whole bunch of research on values and discovered that values were, strangely enough, not just personal and psychological, but cultural. And that there were three competing subcultures in the United States. One, the religious right traditionals, another, the big business moderns, and the third, we didn't have a name for. And so I named that group the cultural creatives. Having a research company in Silicon Valley, I said, well, you know, you've got the cultural conservatives over there in the next valley, and you've got the technological creatives here in Silicon Valley, maybe the people we're looking at are cultural creatives rather than cultural conservatives. And everybody said, oh, what an awkward name. Why can't you come up with a one-word deal for that market segment? And my response was, well, first of all, it ain't a market segment. It's an actual cultural group. And so we need to deal with the fact that a lot of people back in the late 70s and early 80s were actually trying to create a different culture, but they were doing it pretty much on their own, feeling like, oh, it's just me and a few of my friends. The problem with the it's just me and a few of my friends was actually what I kept finding in the research was that there were millions of them in the United States. The smallest percent I ever came up with in the early research was like 18% of Americans, which meant that, oh, well, that was about 36 million adults in the United States. So that was a big number. But in focus groups, we would say, we would tell them, well, you're all here in the room because you share the same values with each other. And invariably, somebody would pipe up and say, hey, wait a minute. I know it's only me and a couple of my friends. What do you mean? How did you get all of us together here? And that kind of the suspicion of it was kind of interesting to watch. But the other thing was the sense of isolation. I'm in this all by myself. I got here alone. I went through a very fine mesh filter and stripped away my earlier life, and now I've changed what I'm doing, and I've found a few friends, and I've probably gotten divorced and remarried or, you know, all sorts of other life change issues, moved to a new city, took a new job, left my big corporation and started my own green company, things like that. And so it became really evident that what I needed to do with the values research was say, how is something so fundamental as a cultural shift actually occurring? If this is a fundamental cultural shift and these people are really aware of ecological crisis on the one hand and really longing for personal growth on the other hand, that their inner life really matters, because those are the two things that really set them off from other Americans, that ecology and social responsibility was a big deal, and they were wondering how to do anything about it, and the other part was their personal life actually had an inner life to it and not just external status kind of things. And not just conforming to tradition. What was it? So what were they trying to accomplish, and how did they get to be that way? So I spent the last 10 years from the 80s into the 90s really trying to research that.
Well, Paul, that's a good introduction to it. I can hear the music in the background, the music in my ears here, so to speak, but I think that's useful to get a sense of what are the two major dimensions that really sort of characterize the cultural creatives. But I think there's some interesting views and perspectives about how this research has evolved. Let's get to that when we come back and continue this about the positive nature of the potentiality that comes with this. Let's take a break here on Zoomed. I'm John Schmidt, and joining me today, Paul Ray, co-author of The Cultural Creatives, and bringing that wealth of perspective to bear. Come back in a minute.
When it comes to business,
you'll find the experts here.
Voice America Business Network. The world is in flux, primed for a great transition, possibly an epical one. How does it impact you? Does it reshape the questions you ask? the way you view leadership. Today's complexities and challenges call for new realms of leadership. The world needs resilience and adaptability, new levels of innovation and brilliance. At Avastone Consulting, we know that our times call for shifts of mind. How do we cultivate real shifts of mind in our leaders? Not through conventional development, which focuses on gaining skills and knowledge within an established worldview. Shifts of mind truly expand the worldview itself, enlarge the capacity to see through new eyes, and transform interpretations of reality and the actions that accompany them. Those who embrace shifts of mind are the kind of leaders that Avastone helps to build. Change the way you pursue the future. Call Avastone Consulting at 1-678-461-8888. That's 1-678-461-8880. Or visit avastoneconsulting.com. Avastone Consulting, your source for leadership development, working with complex organizations toward evolutionary shifts of mind.
Confessions of a Potentially Perfect Parent, brought to you by AdoptUsKids.org.
I might look like an adult, like a person who could possibly be a parent, but I have no idea how to talk like one. And everyone knows that if you want to be a parent, you have to sound good when you say things like, "Don't make me turn this car around," or "Because I said so," or "Don't make me come back there." I don't even really know what those things mean, but I know that I actually believed my parents when they said them to me. How did they manage to sound so convincing? Here we go. "Don't make me come back there." Ugh, no, that's not tough enough at all. Kids can sense weakness. "Don't make me come back there." Ooh, yeah, that's better. In fact, that kind of sounded like my dad.
Weird.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to listen to you practice your dad voice. Call 1-888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUsKids.org for more information. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Zoom Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's A-V-A-S-T-O-N-E consulting.com. Now, back to Zoom Leadership.
Okay, back on Zoom today, Paul Ray is joining us, and we're talking about cultural creatives and the potentiality of this emerging wisdom culture. Paul, pick up a little bit more. We were just getting into some of the kind of the orientation to the cultural creative and how it's actually occurring and how is this something different really emerging. Pick up with that. I think you had a good flow going here.
Okay. So I started American Lives in 1986, and we were basically doing opinion polling and market research because values were a much better predictor of what people actually do, who they'll vote for, what good causes they'll give money to, things like their desire for green products or organic food or new kinds of vacations or whatever. So the whole point to this was to say, what is it that values predict well to, and, well, why do they predict well? And the distinction we were coming up with is that anything that people have in their lives that's really important to their life priorities, anything that is symbolically loaded, anything that's got a big consequence for their lives or their children's lives, is going to be predicted well by people's values. So essentially what we were seeing was the split that was developing, of course, between the religious right and all the rest of America, so that you had traditionals on the one hand and moderns who were both business conservatives and liberals on the other hand. But there was a group that didn't buy either side of that, and that was the cultural creatives. And they were people who were literally searching around to create a new culture. And so you could predict, and I did predict quite often, that a lot of the cultural inventions that would appear, like yoga centers, new kinds of houses, all sorts of new kinds of vacations, creating a demand for authenticity in business and a demand for authenticity in politics, which finally became the Obama campaign. All of that came about because of cultural creatives. It's literally the case that we wouldn't have organic food without them, we wouldn't have green businesses without them, and we wouldn't have Obama as president without them. So it's quite fascinating to see that what we're looking at is an incredibly slow change, but very steady. My guess is that there were too few of them to measure in the 60s when all the hoo-ha was going on with various new kinds of developments in society, but that they've grown at 2 or 3% a year now, steadily, for 50 years. And that means that today they're up to 35% in the United States. They've literally doubled since I started measuring them in 86. And they're at 35% in Japan, and independent studies have shown that they're at 35% in most of the countries of Western Europe. So what is this all about? Well, it's in fact about them being some of the best informed people on the planet. One of the things that we found out was that, in fact, they read twice as much as everybody else. They're very, very efficient in using the Internet. They find out all of what they want to know and using less time to find it out. And they're also more socially engaged.
So it strikes me here with the growth of this doubling of it, then, Paul, and with the dual emphasis that you describe, ecology and social sustainability responsibility, viewing it then, and that coupled with an inner life, that we're really opening the bounds of perspectives in some respect here, too. And on Zoom, we've talked about this, being able to see the whole, see the planet more fully as a whole, as opposed to a more narrow sense. Is that what you're really describing in terms of the cultural creatives, too?
It really is. What we're looking at is a tendency to look two different ways away from the fragmented factoids of the media. So what you had were people who were stretching the boundaries outward, looking out there farther than what's just happening in the United States or their own country in Europe or Japan, and being concerned about the planet because they were highly informed about what was going on around the planet, but also reaching inside, in here, to validate the interior perspective of spirituality and personal development over the whole course of your life, not believing that you would freeze at age 18 or 21, but that you keep developing over your entire life. And it was very important that women were taking the lead. It was also very important that the sense of social responsibility came from engaging in all the new social movements, whether it be organic food or ecology or jobs and social justice or personal development, psychology and new spiritualities or the ecology concerns that are well beyond Save the Baby Seals. And that whole set of social responsibilities, there's 20 kinds of new social movements, and they are about three times as likely to be engaged in them as everybody else. That it, by engaged, I don't necessarily mean they're out on the barricades waving placards. They read everything that the movements are advocating. They give money to the good causes. They talk to lots of people. They're the opinion leaders in our society about all the new developments. They're very, very influential. And you could see that in the Obama campaign this last election. And so that influential quality of them comes from the personal authenticity that they engage in themselves, on the one hand, and that they are often heavily networked. They are at the center of networks, and they're often the best informed people in their networks, so that their opinions actually matter to a lot of other people. And that's the sign of how a certain kind of change occurs. And this kind of change is a reframing. It's deciding that the basic terms in which the old arguments happen in New York and Washington are basically wrong. We don't want to get stuck in a stupid argument that isn't going anywhere. And that's the conclusion many of them have come to, that the media have made stupid arguments, that the politicians are stuck in totally unproductive hassles with each other, and that big business has quite frequently got its head up its ass. And so it's very important that the population we're talking about shows up every darn time that you find something interesting going on in the culture. Oh, yeah, they're engaged in that one, too. And, of course, that set off a bunch of counter-reactions against them by the people who are trying to nail down the status quo.
So it seems to me, Paul, what you're describing is, in some respects, what we've been talking about, a reflection back on Zoomed, which is being able to get some distance and see the big picture, see the larger implications of what's going on and what's not working, mm-hmm. being able to not just accept the words as they come off the media, which is influencing in a particular direction, often around the traditional and the big business context. You're really providing a context for me, or mirroring back, especially with this sense of seeing the outside world but having it connected at a deeper interior level. You're beginning to shape some of the conversation here about the potentiality of this, which is where we led into the show, that
right.
there's some positive potential that's coming out of this expanded value base and world view at the same time. And maybe that's really the head. We've only got a couple of minutes here in this segment left, but is that the sense that you have of this too, that the cultural creatives really are offering a sense or a platform of perspective that's really valuable to engage the kinds of big systems issues we're talking about?
Absolutely. And if you talk to the scientists who are actually politically, socially engaged, they're cultural creatives. If you talk to the artists and writers, the same thing is true. But what they're all saying and seeing is a very interesting thing. They're not usually the doomsters. Rather, they're saying things like, it's getting better and better and worse, faster and faster.
Mm-hmm.
So better and
getting better,
better
and worse,
worse,
but
faster,
it's not.
And faster.
It's not. Yes. Interesting.
And that is the thing that's crucial to say, is it's not just a kind of case of, oh, we're all doomed. It's not just kind of a kind of thing of, oh, we're going into a world of infinite consumerism. Neither of those is true. Nor are we going to the rapture. What is it that we're actually into? Well, it looks like all the trains are pulling in the station at once. And so take another metaphor, is that we're having cascades of dangerous change, and things are starting to fall apart, and that falling apart as an opportunity as well as a danger.
And so, Paul, I think we're right up here on a break, but I think that that metaphor of the trains in the station, I'd like to really talk a little bit more about the extent to which, in your sense, these cultural creatives are connected, and to what extent there's that potentiality, but also the potentiality that comes from what forward view might actually be elicited out of this, and sort of the relationship of this, so that we're not in this doomer perspective that gets painted so often by the media and casting somewhat of this aside. But let's come back. Paul Ray is with us here. We're continuing this conversation, potentiality in the emerging wisdom culture. Zoomed, come right back. John Schmidt here, continuing in a moment.
Stocks, bonds, investment opportunities, financial news, and talk. We can help. Call us now toll-free, 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
The world is in flux, primed for a great transition, possibly an epical one. How does it impact you? Does it reshape the questions you ask? The way you view leadership? Today's complexities and challenges call for new realms of leadership. The world needs resilience and adaptability, new levels of innovation and brilliance. At Avastone Consulting, we know that our times call for shifts of mind. How do we cultivate real shifts of mind in our leaders? Not through conventional development, which focuses on gaining skills and knowledge within an established worldview. Shifts of mind truly expand the worldview itself, enlarge the capacity to see through new eyes, and transform interpretations of reality and the actions that accompany them. Those who embrace shifts of mind are the kind of leaders that Avastone helps to build. Change the way you pursue the future. Call Avastone Consulting at 1-678-461-8880. That's 1-678-461-8880. Or visit avastoneconsulting.com. Avastone Consulting, your source for leadership development, working with complex organizations toward evolutionary shifts of mind.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure, what's up?
There's this girl I kind of like.
Well, if there's one thing I know, it's women.
Really?
Well, they didn't call me Velvet for nothing.
I don't get it.
Smooth. I was smooth.
Oh.
Anyway, it's easy. You just got to impress her. Show her how strong you are.
Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
I don't know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt, if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, ugh! Try it.
Ugh!
See, there you go. And you should dress up. Start wearing a shirt and tie.
I'll look like a dork.
No, you'll look successful.
Okay.
And finally, you can start using my cologne. The ladies love it, so don't be shy. Splash it on.
Thanks, Dad.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To find out how you can adopt, please visit our website at AdoptUSKids.org or call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Zoomed Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's A-V-A-S-T-O-N-E consulting.com. Now, back to Zoomed Leadership.
Okay, John Schmidt back here again with Paul Ray. And Paul, you got me really buzzing in a couple of areas here, one of which is about what has to happen and what's going to be rolling forward as this cultural shift happens. I mean, the sense of what we're facing. The other piece of that, though, is to what extent are cultural creatives connected to each other?
Mm-hmm.
And I think both are really curious, but, I mean, take your choice there. Where's a good point? What's your sense of either one?
Okay, well, the fact is that the cultural creatives look like an audience in the same theater. That is, they're all looking at the same stage, they're hearing the same words, they're coming to the same conclusions, they're nodding their heads and saying, yeah, well, that's what we got to do. And then they walk out and go back to their everyday lives, and they don't talk to each other or the other members of the audience. And that's what's been true for the last 40 years. So what's happening now that's really new and different is all the social media that are appearing on the Internet. You know, the old model of how to contact lots of people is the broadcast model. It's a center-to-periphery putting out of information, but very little of it comes back the other way, and it's kind of manipulative. The cultural creatives are not going to put up with that. the first thing. But the other thing is that we've only seen that actually work in terms of mobilizing lots of people in the Obama campaign. You know, the tendency to use this interactivity of the Internet has finally come home to roost in politics. You know, politics has been lagging behind business in this respect of dealing with people in a more authentic way and in a more interactive way. Business has been at this probably since the early 90s, and now we're almost to 2010, so it's easy to say the politics is a good 15, 20 years behind what business has been doing. But now it's really happening. It's crucial that the cultural creatives are people who already have developed participative habits and good, high-quality participative skills in group decision-making and in creativity and in mobilizing other people on a relatively smaller scale. And so they're really good at this kind of political mobilization. So you see stuff in the media that's just ignorant, where it says, oh, the Obama campaign trained lots of people to be community activists. I'm sorry, it doesn't happen that quick. It takes quite a long time for people to learn how to do all that. They already had those skills. They were available, and the Obama folks tapped into what already existed. And what it shows you is the lousy mental models of the pundits. So it's very important that they've been available to be mobilized for 15, 20 years. And so what we've got in Europe, in the United States, and in Japan is simultaneously a huge, humongous audience. We're talking a couple of 100 million people total across those areas. Let's see, it's 70 million cultural creatives in the United States. It's 90 million in Western Europe. That's 160 million. And there's probably about another 40 million of them in Japan. And that's just adults. That's not even mentioning the kids who are coming on the scene, the millennial generation. And so we're talking a couple hundred million people, and they are available, and they're eager to get engaged, and they're good at it. And that's a pretty crucial thing to say, is this is one of the really positive developments, is we're right on the lip of a level of social engagement that the media is not ready for, that the newspapers don't want to hear about because there's no revenue for them in it, that television doesn't know whether to shit or go blind, excuse my French, what you've got is a shift in media in the public realm, and that is one of the crucial things about all of this that's going on right now is we're looking at the breakdown of a very large number of business models. We're looking at the breakdown of a very large number of institutions that are just basically not coping. And that's the other big trend of our time. There isn't a whole lot of room for a new civilization to emerge in the tightly organized structures of modernism as we've known it developing over the last 500 years.
So Paul, doesn't that really then bring to the point I was opening the show with, that the cultural creatives have an opportunity to coalesce around some inspired, positive view of the future, so that we're not just wallowing in the sense of what's going to happen as this system breaks down, but
exactly,
that it's providing a mobilizing or rallying vision, so to speak. I mean, is that part of what could be happening if this were so inclined and so moved in that direction?
Yeah, you've got two things going on that are necessarily intertwined, and the better and better, worse and worse, faster and faster stuff includes the idea that, yes, chunks of modernism are falling off with a cascade of crises going on around the planet. A whole bunch of things isn't working. You can make long lists of crises, and there's no point in us belaboring it. Everybody listening to us knows what they are. At the same time, what's happening because of that is big spaces are opening up for people to invent new possibilities. There is no space for inventing new possibilities that are alternatives to modernity as we've known it, the urban industrial bureaucratic paradigm, the big government paradigm, big business paradigm, big media paradigm, big military paradigm. The bigs are the big part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so the question is, what comes up next? You know, and so we're looking at a bunch of little swift mammals running around the feet of the big dinosaurs. And many of those dinosaurs are not going to make it. And you can say, oh, ain't it awful? No, it isn't awful. The question is, what will people decide to do with each other when they start turning toward each other and saying, oh, we have all these creative possibilities. What is it that we really want to create together? So what I'm suggesting is that there are a number of sectors of modern life that in which new possibilities are being developed, and in every sector What you see are trends that the media don't want to talk about. They're acting as the gatekeepers of the official reality, and that we have lots of social inventions already in process that when you look at all of them, set them all side by side, you've got a bunch of converging lines, and they're converging on the next level of civilization. And guess what, folks? It is not a national culture. We're talking about a planetary integration kind of pattern, not market globalization, thank you very much. We're talking about planetary integration is the next development in civilization. And that looks an awful lot like what things look like at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. You know, at the Industrial Revolution, people talked about satanic mills and how horrible it was that peasants were being driven off the land and other ugly things that were going on, including black plagues and so on. So you can say, yes, a lot of really ugly stuff happens when you get a change from one kind of civilization to another, just like the ugly stuff that happened when the barbarians were overrunning the old kingdoms and people had to set up empires to hold them out. So, you know, industrialism was it. Now we're looking at the breakdown again. What is terrorism except the reaction of the powerless to find a way to leverage things against another kind of big commercial empire structure and a big, powerful army structure that they can't confront directly in the field? So this is the time. The breakdown and build-up is all happening at once. It feels like a train wreck on the one hand, but on the other, it's, in fact, amazingly productive, amazingly possible to do something new.
And, Paul, on the show, we've been having a number of conversations about where the power is centered, as you were describing, with the big dinosaurs, and so to speak. And part of the conversation has also revolved around where this mobilization effort needs to come out of civil society to really influence government, even potentially more so, as the Obama administration is propping up and continuing a lot of the financial system, as some have been describing on the show.
Yeah.
But it sounds to me like at the same time that there is that sense. And so a question comes. We've got a couple of minutes left in this segment and then our last segment. Question becomes, so how do you connect the people in the theater, and is it around the civil society to really help mobilize that?
If civil society will start advocating for positive things instead of only saying we've got to stop that bad stuff from happening.
Stopping. So a change in the focus is really what you're describing.
Really good enough. I'm sorry, what was that?
The change in the focus is what you're saying. It's a reframing away from avoiding the downside as opposed to positively focusing on something on the positive, the upside, the way we're evolving as a humanity.
Exactly. So civil society organizations have the potential to take some leadership here, but the risk is that many of them are dependent on using scare tactics to raise money one last time, and they're poisoning the well.
Yeah.
So they need to behave in a much more positive kind of way.
So we're coming up on a break here, Paul. I can hear the background coming in on us, but I think this is an interesting piece here about connecting people in the audience and the means for that and how there's a sense of opening people to the need for this positive side of it and then mobilizing those within the cultural creatives to be able to do that. Love to get your thoughts on that as we get into the last segment here. Zoomed Leadership, John Schmidt and Paul Ray here today. Last segment coming up. Join us. Take a short break. Thanks.
Up-to-date business and financial news. Call now and get the financial information you need. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790.
The experts are here.
Voice America Business Network.
The world is in flux, primed for a great transition, possibly an epical one. How does it impact you? Does it reshape the questions you ask? The way you view leadership. Today's complexities and challenges call for new realms of leadership. The world needs resilience and adaptability, new levels of innovation and brilliance. At Avastone Consulting, we know that our times call for shifts of mind.
How do we cultivate real shifts of mind in our leaders? Not through conventional development, which focuses on gaining skills and knowledge within an established worldview. Shifts of mind truly expand the worldview itself, enlarge the capacity to see through new eyes, and transform interpretations of reality and the actions that accompany them. Those who embrace shifts of mind are the kind of leaders that Avastone helps to build. Change the way you pursue the future. Call Avastone Consulting at 1-678-461-8880. That's 1-678-461-8880. Or visit avastoneconsulting.com. Avastone Consulting, your source for leadership development, working with complex organizations toward evolutionary shifts of mind.
The Marsh Engel Show. Join the movement to empower yourself with the essentials of feminine power and success, and learn how women around the world are becoming more inspired, more influential, and absolutely amazing. Each week, Marsh sits down for an engaging conversation with women who are boldly committed to living their most amazing life. You'll discover ways to step into your greatest vision, deepen your relationships, and unleash your real creative brilliance. Get ready. It's time to jump into the conversation. That's Monday afternoons at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern for the Marsh Engel Show on the Voice America Business Network.
Do you need directions to solid financial future? If so, the Money Answers Show with Jordan Goodman will provide you with a roadmap to making smart money decisions in every area of your personal finances. Join Jordan every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 3 p.m. Eastern for the Money Answers Show on the Voice America Business Channel. Learn how and where to get the best deals on mortgages, cars, and insurance. Find out the best ways to save for college and retirement. Get out of debt, improve your credit rating, and save on your taxes. The Money Answers Show with Jordan Goodman will provide you with great tips on investment opportunities in real estate, stocks, annuities, and other investment vehicles. That's the Money Answers Show with Jordan Goodman on the Voice America Business Channel every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You're listening to Zoom Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's A-V-A-S-T-O-N-E consulting.com. Now, back to Zoom Leadership.
Okay, back here with Paul Ray, last segment today. John Schmidt here with you as well. And Paul, I think we have sort of a crescendo where we're heading with this. And I'll go back to the opening of the show and the title about the emerging wisdom culture.
Yeah.
I mean, we can start to move toward the sense of the further wisdom and opening this wisdom into the future and the narrative, the story that might need to be told here that's a little different than just moving away from the dangers and doom of where we're heading.
Exactly. Well, the first idea is that I'm going to be talking about not spiritual wisdom, but practical wisdom. And practical wisdom is about good judgment. And good judgment in this case means growing the context that you think about things. If you want to say, what's a real leader do? A real leader brings in a much larger background context, more inclusive of different kinds of people, bigger territory, longer time horizons, and much more social sophistication about how people can participate in things, and much more empowerment of all the people to engage in creativity together instead of just sort of routine banging on shields and being against the enemy. And so the whole idea here is that a wisdom culture is beyond the individualistic ideas that we have about what wisdom is. It's not just the wise old person, you know, the Merlins and the other wizards kind of stuff. What it's really about is to say whole cultures can be wise or foolish. It's almost easier to identify what folly looks like, say Bush, for example, than it is to say what does wisdom look like. But we need to talk about that, because a wise culture is going to look after future generations. It's going to say, what's going to happen to our children with global warming and peak oil and so on? What's going to happen to our children if we have an unstable financial system worldwide that collapses on us? Things like that. So prudence becomes part of the issue, but there are prudent cultures and there are big risk-taking cultures, and there are cultures that are in absolute denial, that close their eyes tight because the elite doesn't want to have to pay any attention to it. The anti-leader, in effect, kind of phenomenon. So the wisdom culture is one that's ecologically sustainable. Wisdom culture is one that empowers lots of different kinds of people to contribute. A wisdom culture is one that looks out for the children of the future and, in particular, starts dealing with planet-wide conflict. And it starts noticing that, in fact, where the real progress is coming is probably planetary integration, that the next emerging system where all the opportunities are have to do with linking together many diverse kinds of cultures. Now, anybody that's been in business who has looked at all at creativity knows that if you've got a homogeneous room full of people and a heterogeneous room full of people and a decent process, the homogeneous one will top out at a mediocre level of inventiveness, and the heterogeneous one is very likely to come up with the solutions you really, really want. Well, how do we take advantage of our creativity, of heterogeneity all around the planet to deal with our big crises? That is the danger and opportunity kind of transition that Toynbee liked to talk about, the challenge and response. So challenge and response of our time is that, yes, we've got to deal with global warming and ecological collapses and being hooked on fossil fuels and being hooked on a financial system that's really like run like a casino. On the other hand, we can say we've got lots and lots and lots of people who are aware inwardly of something that's more spiritual, more developmental, and outwardly of what's going on around the planet. How do we hook them together? And so that kind of longer time perspective is precisely where we've got to go. And that means you get into it for the long haul. You don't say, I've got to have a program that's going to deliver results in 2 years. You say, oh, no, this is a process we're engaged in that's for integrating the planetary civilization. That will take generations, maybe even centuries. It's not months, years, decades. It means that there's no place on the entire planet that's going to be buffered from ecological crises, no place to go to escape all that. It means we're all in the same boat. Wisdom means things like enough is sufficiency for each person, not wealth for a few and poverty for the rest of us. Wisdom means a planetary soft landing in terms of total population, in terms of finding new ways of generating and using energy, new ways of cleaning up and restoring the environment, and things like that. It's doing the collective work of ecological protection and restoration, certainly, but it's also doing the work of reducing those bigs, big military, big media, big corporations, big government to scale that's appropriate. You know, national governments have a lot of things they don't do very well. They would be better done by regional governments within the United States or whole continent-wide governments or even in a planet-wide government, if that should ever occur. And so what you can think of is that our communities need to be nested within larger and larger systems, where nesting means you protect them. They're the most protected part, not the most powerless part. And things like that start becoming really a wiser way of understanding it. And finally, it means participatory governments, not representative government. And so representative government is the kind of thing where the elite lets the masses be known every now and then, once every 4 years. But participatory kind of stuff says the everyday governance process engages lots and lots and lots of people, not just at election time. And so those are all examples of how you move toward a wiser kind of civilization. And they're all on the docket right now. They're all being talked about. And there are hundreds of technology inventions that are available to make those things actually work.
So I'm hearing a couple of things here. I'm hearing the wisdom of the culture as a reflection of the wisdom of the individuals and the depth of that that you're able to bring forward. That in many respects, what I'm hearing you, Paul, is describe a new narrative at the same time, a view of the future and how this group is really participating in that. But it seems to me you also said something else earlier on about the faster and faster. And I suspect that the faster and faster, although this may take some centuries, that there's a response that has to happen with that.
Yeah.
We're closing seconds here, probably 30 seconds, but let me just say, Paul, it's been a marvelous opportunity to have you on here. I really want to invite you back. We need to continue this conversation because I think there's so much to this, and your wealth of view and perspective of the research and wisdom on that to go along with this larger wisdom conversation, I think it's essential for it. Thank you for joining us today, Paul.
Love it. Good work.
Great. Thank you. Thank you. Zoomed Leadership for another week. Continuing our conversation with this, we are at that point of challenge, response, and we have wisdom to be brought to bear, as Paul is so eloquently describing here, as a culture but built on a platform of leadership, a platform of wisdom in our own leadership. And we, in fact, as individuals, as cultural creatives, or others in society, exercising that leadership as a verb, not a noun in position, in someplace else, in business, in government. It's up to us to be able to make this kind of move and take this momentum into our hands. We'll continue the conversation next week as Janet Larson, as I said, will be here with the Earth Policy Institute. It is a continuing flow. Thank you again, Paul, for joining us today. We'll continue this conversation. Have a great week here on Zoom. John Schmidt here again. Have a great week. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you again for listening to Zoomed Leadership with host John Schmidt. Please be sure to join us again next Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel, and have a terrific week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.